The Heart of Rural America is brought to you by the new auction platform, Bid on Beef. We invite you to buy beef the cowboy way through an honest bidding process where you have the power to pick the ranch, pick the cut, and pick the price. You are in the driver's seat, and we are excited to ship beef directly to your door. Use code WELCOME10 for your first $10 to shop when you register to bid at bidonbeef.com. Welcome to the Heart of Rural America podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Radke, an American cattle rancher and motivational speaker, raising my kids and writing children's books in South Dakota. There's a David and Goliath story unfolding in agriculture today. And I don't know about you, but my money is on the underdog, the hardworking folks who value faith, family, freedom, and their farming communities. This show will highlight the untold stories of these resilient and determined families who I have the great pleasure of meeting in my travels across this nation as an agricultural speaker. It is my hope that their stories will remind us to live with great courage because we are not alone in this fight to keep producers on the land and meat, dairy, and eggs on the dinner table. Now let's hit the dusty trail together as we uncover the heart of rural America.
Welcome to your show. Here's my mom, Amanda Radke.
Hey everyone, it's Amanda Radke back for another episode of the Heart of Rural America podcast, the show where we highlight great people doing inspiring things in their rural communities to strengthen agriculture and this great country that we hold dear. Today's guest, I would describe as a true servant leader, a person that's willing to sacrifice much in order to stand up for what is right. I had the opportunity to meet her, or I guess first listen to her speak over a year ago in Canton, South Dakota at a carbon pipeline informational meeting that was standing room only. And on the stage that day was this beautiful representative, Carla Lems of Canton, South Dakota, who was speaking about the dangers of this pipeline. And ever since, we've become dear friends, and I'm just thankful to be beside her in this fight. So Carla, welcome to the show.
Well, Amanda, thank you for having me today. And I will just say right back at you, because I certainly admire you and everything that you have done to help us in this endeavor. And here we are today. So
here we are. It's has it been a long 3.5 years for you?
It has, but yet it's gone really quickly. And what I always tell people is, yeah, it's been a long, hard fought battle. But the great thing about it is it has woke up a lot of our South Dakota friends and neighbors to the things that are going on in our state, not only because just with the Park Carbon Pipeline, but that was the driving force to get people to start paying attention. And now they're paying attention to more things. They're getting involved at their local schools, their school board things, things that are going on, you know, in their townships and the counties. And so I'm just seeing a groundswell of support for people getting involved in government. And that makes everything better when we have the people paying attention and involved.
Absolutely. Yeah. From the very lowest level of governments, your precinct members, your school board members, it's all of a sudden there's just a demand for transparency and communication and accountability of our elected officials. And it's kind of really highlighted who is in it for the people and who is in it for other reasons. So Carla, you're one of those people that I consider to be in it for the right reasons, not for political ambitions or financial gain or prestige and recognition, but because you care about the future of our state and our communities. So tell me a little bit, how did you get into politics? What was your start into all of this?
Well, you know, I have been involved in our county party for several years. And so I was involved somewhat, and my dad was always somewhat involved in politics. We had, you know, different officials would visit our farm and, you know, we'd provide an opportunity for them to speak. I remember George Mickelson being here and, you know, several through the years, things that they would attend. And so we had these conversations around the dinner table, who was in and who was out and what were the issues. And so I grew up in that kind of an atmosphere, but I really jumped in more after my kids got a little bit older, actually got involved in our county party. Like I said, I'm from Lincoln County. And so that's kind of where I got my feet wet. And then there was an opening in my district and the representative was not going to run again. And so I talked to a few people and I really was getting more concerned about the things more on the national level because of what I saw happen in the 2020 election and the January 6th episode with, you know, everything that went down there. And I was like, you know, this might be a good time for me. And then, of course, we had COVID, which made everything different. You know, it just everything seemed to change. And so I'm like, you know, this might be a good time for me to get involved more. And so that's when I was like, you know, I'm going to run. And it was about that same time that this pipeline kind of reared its head. And I didn't really know a lot about that. I know I spoke with somebody in the press the other day and they're like, I thought that's why you got involved. And I said, no, it really wasn't. But it just kind of happened to be the timing of it at the same time. And so, then, you know, it just became my fight because it was affecting us personally with our family. Both pipelines at the time, Navigator and Summit, were going to be coming through our property. And so it made me pay attention right away. And of course it was in my county. And so other people were also concerned. So I started going to those meetings and raising my voice there. And by the time I got elected into the legislature, it was a forefront of one of my priorities.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if you drive through Carla's district, there's signs everywhere, because not only is a carbon sequestration pipeline wanting to plow through the neighborhood and the community where all these beautiful homes and people live, but also there's a prison project kind of right there and smack dab in the middle of it. And Carla, did you feel like, do you feel like targeted kind of, because all of a sudden private property rights, it's all around you. I mean, you can't drive down the street without being reminded of it.
Right. And for some reason, you know, Lincoln County got both of these things going on at one time. And so again, the press, I had somebody say to me, boy, it's just like you're against everything. I'm like, well, it's because it's in my backyard and it happens to be something that my constituents are concerned about. And so that makes me concerned about it, whether I am personally or not. There are many people in my area that are concerned about this in District 16.
Right. So let's kind of recap 2024, the fight. You know, we're getting close to the end of the year and landowners alongside legislators and just really good people that want to stand up for private property rights. We've accomplished a lot in the year. I mean, the fight continues, but I just kind of want to pause and recap what has been done in South Dakota, because everywhere I travel, people ask me, what is the secret? How are you fighting back? Because all across the nation, the same playbook is being played, whether it's wind or solar or hydro. There is a chipping away of our private property rights and basically a land grab happening under the guise of the Green New Deal. And somehow, some way, South Dakota is kind of holding it off for the moment. So let's maybe recap. First, I guess, tell me about the legislative session and the package of bills that came out of there. And then we'll talk about how that was kind of a catalyst for everything that followed.
Sure. Well, I'll start you back out in 2023. That was my first year in the legislature. And I had some people come to me and say, hey, could you carry legislation? And I'm like, wow, I'm a brand new rookie at this. I'm not really sure that I'm the person. But because I was so invested in it and was experiencing things firsthand, had been to the meetings, et cetera, I'm like, yeah, I'll do whatever I can. So I ended up carrying a bill, HB 1133, that actually made it out of the House, passed 40 to 30, I believe it was. It was basically no eminent domain for these CO2 pipelines, right? Because it was not anything for public use. And that really was the impetus for bringing that forward. So we did not feel that it was a common carrier. We did not feel it was a commodity. And needless to say, it died in the Senate committee. Fast forward, we went through the public hearings through the summer of 2023 at the PUC and you know, came up on the legislative. They were denied their permit. But all the while, all this was going on, of course, we had 160 landowners or so sued in the state of South, condemnation in the state of South Dakota, along with some of our counties, because they had put ordinances and setbacks in place. So then we get to the legislative session of 2024. And, you know, we all probably know that story, but maybe some of your listeners do not. So there was a host of property rights bills that were brought. A few of them just maybe gave us more standing before the PUC, gave us more standing in court with condemnation proceedings, just really common sense things that gave property owners a more level playing field, I would say. Yep. And I will say all of those really common sense bills, along with HB 1219, which was very similar to the bill I had brought in 2023, which Representative John Hansen brought, no eminent domain for CO2 pipelines. All of those bills failed, but the three that came out of the chute were deemed the Landowner Bill of Rights. And, you know, that was a bill of goods, in my opinion. that we were sold, and basically saying, on the one hand, you know, these bills are going to protect property owners. You know, we're going to have economic development with this. This is going to be good for landowners. The pipeline company doesn't even like these bills. And, but yet at the end of the day, that really wasn't true, but they did pass. And so that left us with this referendum, and, mm-hmm. and that was the, where we could go. That was the recourse that the people of South Dakota decided to go forward with. We had people involved at, in every single county getting petitions, and, you know, the process. We had to have over 17,000 signatures in 90 days. We got that done overwhelmingly, basically almost doubled that number with 37,000 signatures and very high success rate with that. Then through the summer, we traveled county to county, city to city, rural district to rural district, and really got our message out. And, you know, we were outspent 15-1 in that effort, but yet we came out on top and won 65 out of the 66 counties on our side. So really, and with RL21, our message got out despite being outspent. We took it to the people, and the people responded overwhelmingly. What I think that said in this state was, it wasn't just about RL21. This was a referendum on the pipeline, and we won. And so now here we are with Summit now coming back again and saying, we're going to resubmit. And, you know, we have this permit that just was filed 2 days ago, and we're going to start this process again.
At Radke Land and Cattle, we proudly use Advanced Ag Products BioReg Plus with its proprietary coating technology for slow release of essential oils in the lower GI tract. BioReg Plus products are designed and proven to help beef producers with overall performance, feed intake, gut integrity, nutritional support, immunity, fertility, and reproductive health. With the rising cost of beef cattle production today, having optimal performance and minimizing health challenges in every head counts. Learn more at bioreg.com and tell them Amanda sent you. The Heart of Rural America is presented to you by CK6 Consulting Services. I have the great pleasure of working alongside the CK6 team, including Chris Earle, Wes Tiemann, and Cody Fleeman, and it's an honor to assist cattle producers as they strive to meet their business goals. With a purebred Angus specialization, we have a full slate of auction sales coming up as we work to maximize price discovery and capture true value for our clients and customers. Plus, let us help you identify your next herd sire for the upcoming breeding season. At CK6 Source, you'll find great customer service, fast shipping, and a focus on leading Angus genetics. Learn more about what we do at ck6consulting.com and ck6source.com. We would love to assist you any way we can. God bless. That's where we are. And it's put a damper on our victories because, and Carla's modest, isn't even going to say the most recent victory. So I'll say it for her. But not only did RL21 through the referendum process, getting on the ballot, winning 65 of 66 counties, winning 59% to reject this bill of sale for Summit Carbon Solutions, which would have rubber stamped the project. It would have stripped away our local control. And it was a backroom shady deal made by politicians carrying the water for Summit Carbon Solutions. And those politicians, it was led by Will Mortensen and Casey Crabtree, and it was signed by Governor Noem. And the people did not agree. And I'm glad the people got to vote on that. But they also voted in other ways. In our primary, talk about what happened in the primary in June, because the pipeline basically became the issue that we were voting on in that primary.
Right. Yes. So there were 14 incumbents that were voted out of office in our primary. And I believe 11 of those had voted for SB 201. And so it really was a mandate on the pipeline itself. And like I said, yet I want to say it became even bigger because the people got involved, those people that showed up to all of these meetings that came to our Capitol to testify on these bills, they started paying attention to other issues as well. And they started to see, a lot of times there seems like an attitude to the people themselves, whether it's on local levels, and I'm not trying to paint with a broad brush that all legislators or commissioners or, you know, any elected officials are like this, because we have some really good people in position as well. But we always have to be mindful and to remember that it is, we are elected by the people for the people and for the interests of the people. And it's good to have a reminder once in a while that that's really who we are there to serve first and foremost. So yes, I counted the other day in the House, we have 30 new legislators. Now, six of them are returning that were maybe in the legislature from the past. Maybe from the Senate to the House, but 24 out of the 30 are brand new legislators. And so, you know, we have a brand new slate, if you will. And yes, we have returning legislators as well, which we will be needed because we need experience as well. Many of these people are here because of SB 201. And so we really do have a mandate from the people to take care of this issue. And so here we are.
Here we are. It's hard for me to even describe how the people were treated in Pierre during the session. I was sitting there alongside hundreds and hundreds of landowners who on their own time and own dime made the trip to Pierre in the middle of blizzards. I mean, we had have had multiple rallies. We've packed the committee rooms. We've packed the Capitol. We've been very clear in what we're asking for, which is simply to protect our private property rights and to maintain local control and to not allow for eminent domain for private gain for something so silly as a carbon sequestration project that buries plant food. And yet we were treated so poorly, not obviously not by you, but by many. You know, there was Senator Johnson who, when I got up and testified and everybody clapped after I spoke, he chastised me, he yelled at me, and then he yelled at the entire room for, you know, trying to vocalize that they were in support of the statements I had made. You know, I tell that story because that day was so devastating. I just remember being shocked that a legislator would speak to a taxpaying citizen that was just simply there to advocate for their interests. And I wasn't a lobbyist. I wasn't a legislator. I wasn't with an association. I was just a farm mom, just there speaking, and that he would speak to me and all of those people that way. But he was also voted out as well. So the Carla can't probably comment on that, but I will, because I just thought, no, it highlighted that we, the people, deserve to be represented and have our voices heard in peer. And that to me is what fueled a lot of this, so that anger of being overlooked and ignored and basically told, too bad, so sad, we're here to serve an industry. We're here to serve these lobbyists and these big projects in the name of economic development and value-added agriculture. And your constitutional rights, your private property rights don't really mean much if we can make a little bit more money. And that became the theme of 2024. And we saw that carry in not only with the referendum, but also in the leadership vote. So a few days after the election, where Trump and a red wave kind of swept the country, and in South Dakota, we pretty much won every ballot initiative we were shooting for to beat, including RL21. But just a few days later, you guys went to Pierre and you had your House and Senate leadership votes. Tell us how that all shook loose and how it turned out.
Well, you know, within the House and the Senate, obviously, you have people that don't all look through the same sieve. And that's probably good, because that means they're good leadership. But what I would just say about that is there was a shift, obviously, from those overall, the majority of the people that were elected to legislative leadership positions, we are against RL21. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so, and the others were on the other side. Now, there were a few that were elected that didn't ring true. Overall, I mean, I think that, again, we have so many new people in there, and these are caucus elections. So these are Republicans voting on Republicans. And so that's where we sit right now. And so we have had a shift in leadership. And of course, that leadership will decide who's on which committees and who chairs committees and where the bills go and things like that, which is, you know, we did see some issues with that last time. We saw basically, you know, a lot of times where bills went and how committees were formed, those bills sometimes didn't get out of committee. And so it's going to be nice to have maybe a more well-rounded group that can hear these things and hopefully bring good fairness to the process and be able to hear that from the people and really respond again to the mandate that we've been given. And I will just add, you know, I pulled out this oath that we take to the Constitution.
Yes.
And basically, this is what I come back to. And for me, this is what I hold up. And it says, I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of South Dakota. And then it goes on, will faithfully discharge my duties, et cetera. But one of the things I read when I talked about HB 1133 on the floor was in our Bill of Rights in the South Dakota Constitution, we have Article 6, Section 1, which talks about our inherent rights. And it says, all men are born equally free and independent and have certain inherent rights, among which of those are enjoying and defending life and liberty, of acquiring and protecting property, and the pursuit of happiness. And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men. So I really come back to that. There's a lot of things that we see in peer, a lot of things that are, you know, kind of gray, that, but some things are very clearly constitutional issues. And that's really what this came down to for me, was this is a constitutional issue to protect the people's right to acquire and protect their own property. And that's why I am there. I am there first and foremost to protect the people's rights. And then from there on, you know, we have our priorities underneath. But it that has to be number one. And that's, I think, a wake-up call for the elected officials to really remember, again, we have to go back to the Constitution and look at that first and foremost, and then let's proceed from there.
Right. Well, and we've seen, you know, that seems like common sense, right? Like that's what our government was built on. That's the foundation. That's the oath that you take to uphold and protect for the people. And yet when we would go to peer and testify on this, because I thought, well, you know, depending on which scientist you ask, you could skew your argument on safety or the economic benefits of it. Like all of that could be debated, but you can't debate the Constitution. And that Constitution is above all else. And yet some of these legislators seem to have the attitude that the Constitution is just kind of a suggestion and it's secondary, and oh, it's a pesky document that like gets in the way of the pet projects and the whims of whatever exciting things come across these legislators' desk. And so I really think that's the shift in leadership that we're seeing, is that these are constitutional conservatives versus just your everyday Republican, that you're living by those values, those principles of the platform, and more importantly, the values of what it means to be an American.
Working cattle can be stressful at times, but the job is made so much easier with equipment that is safe, strong, and simply designed. I highly recommend Real Tough Livestock Equipment for all your working facility needs. We just installed the deluxe chute at Radke Land and Cattle, and it has been an absolute game changer as we run cows through our chute during AI season. It's durable and easy to use, and it's made to last a lifetime. Real Tough offers a wide range of products, including calving barns, panels, loading chutes, tubs, alleys, and portable working systems. Manufactured in the U.S. of A., Real Tough is family-owned and operated. Their commitment to helping farm and ranch families truly exemplifies what this show is all about. Learn more at realtuff.com, that's T-U-F-F, and be sure to tell them Amanda sent you to receive an extra bonus with your order. Let's get you some iconic green Real Tough equipment headed your way. I promise you're going to love it.
You guys know, as a beef girl, I take grilling very seriously around here. And I've been using Redmond Real Salt for over a decade to season my steaks and burgers. It's unrefined, ancient sea salt, exactly as nature made it. It contains 60 plus naturally occurring trace minerals, and it truly brings out the best of the beef we raise at home on the ranch. This American family-owned business also focuses on livestock products. And at Radke Land and Cattle, we are proud to use the beneficial Redmond Real Salt minerals to get back to the basics and help our cattle improve fertility, immunity, and feed efficiency. It's natural, simple, and effective for people and livestock. Discover more at redmondagriculture.com and redmondlife.com and use code RADKEY to save. Or contact a local dealer and mention my name for a special discount.
So just to kind of recap who's kind of leading the helm now, the South Dakota Searchlight earlier this summer had called
the primary elections, the headline was New Landscape Confronts South Dakota Republicans After Political Earthquake Shakes Incumbents. And so they described it as the primary as an actual earthquake that has shook up Pierre. And now to top it off, that earthquake continues because, you know, those gentlemen that led the pack on 201, they have been ousted from leadership. And in their place, the 2025 House of Representatives will be led by Representative John Hansen of Del Rapids. And then Carla Lems, of course, you've been nominated for Speaker Pro Tem. Are you the first woman to sit in that spot?
Yes, I didn't even know that until after these elections, and it came out in an article. So yes, there has been, I will just say, there has been a female speaker in the past, but never a Speaker Pro Tem.
Okay, it's just really cool and notable. And then you're joined by Representative Scott Odenbach of Spearfish. He'll be the majority leader. And then Marty Overweg from New Holland will serve as assistant majority leader. And then we have on the Senate side, we have the majority leader position went to Senator Jim Melhoff of Pierre, assistant majority leader, Senator Carl Perry of Aberdeen, and then Senator Chris Carr Sioux Falls will serve his first term in the Senate after leaving the House, and he was nominated for Senate President Pro Tempore. And all of those will officially be, I guess, finalized, right, once the session starts. So let's talk about the upcoming session, because I feel like you guys have a mandate now. It's very clear, the will of the people. And instead of being on the defense like we were the last couple sessions, The voting public is expecting offense now. We're expecting to have some issues fixed. What are some of your priorities based on that mandate that you're focused on or looking forward to addressing in the 2025 session?
Well, you know, I think what we're seeing is there is a move to address eminent domain and other issues for property rights, whether it's the PUC process, whether it is court, you know, condemnation process and just compensation. I think that across state lines, even, I think you're seeing a push for these things because we have never had these kind of issues ever before that I know of in our state. And yes, maybe there was a few things, you know, with the interstate system when it went through, with the railroad, with some of these things that were definitely for public use and that many of the public would be using, but literally never to the level of having people condemned and this in these numbers. Right. In our state before. And so it is an issue that we have to deal with. I think Iowa is seeing similar things. I think North Dakota is seeing similar things. And I will just remind our viewers that in Minnesota, you cannot use eminent domain for a carbon dioxide pipeline. So you have to get buy-in from the people. Mm-hmm. And so that's really what we've said from day one is, man, if you can get people to buy into this project, even though maybe I don't agree with it from a safety standpoint or whatever. If somebody else wants it on their property, then I guess we're going to have to deal with that. But overall, we should not be using eminent domain for CO2 pipelines. So I think you're going to see something like that probably come up in one of these states or more than one. We also need, like I said, we're probably going to need some reforms in possibly the PUC process, maybe in the court system with these things. Because like you said, this is not just a CO2 pipeline. We see solar and wind coming on strong. And do we really want to see South Dakota and North Dakota and Iowa covered with only windmills and solar farms? We have, like, we keep cheering for ag in South Dakota. We need to protect ag from these things that are coming in and encroaching, not only on ag itself, but on the beauty that surrounds us and on the quality of life that we now have. So I just think that we really need to think about these things before we just open wide the doors and say, please come because of economic development. Now, I'm not against economic development, but I'm telling you what, we better get those constitutional rights shored up first. And then we need to talk about individual liberties and, like I said, quality of life.
Right. Well, and I think there seems to be some misconception among some legislators or politicians of what economic development means, because, you know, I've been painted as this anti-ag, anti-ethanol, anti-growth. I think we were just described in a newspaper article as the not in my backyard club. You know, we're not against projects or business or growth. And Yet I'm a firm believer in free market capitalism. And let's be honest here. These are public-private partnerships using taxpayer dollars to take land from people who don't want to participate. And I think it's just very interesting that all this federal money is coming in to trample on the people who already call this place home. And, you know, I recently watched Little Pink House on Amazon, and it's about the Kelo versus New London case, where Pfizer, with the help of the government, seized the homes of all these people in a pretty poor, you know, lower class community. And they never even did end up building anything. The lots sit bare now. But the reality is that people's homes were seized because somebody else could add to the tax base higher than an individual family could. And so as I sit on my land here in South Dakota, well, if a 7-Eleven or a Holiday Inn or a solar panel company or whatever decided that my land looked like a good spot, would I then be ousted because someone else could add to the bottom line of South Dakota and its economic development? And that seems to be a pervasive attitude I'm seeing. So I guess, you know, what would you say to the folks that accuse you of like wanting to stop all projects? What is a legislator would be a better approach to value-added agriculture and economic development? What does that look like for you?
I agree with you. The free market is the thing that should be driving these things, and not the funny money that comes out of Washington, D.C., which it's really not funny money because it's my hard-earned tax dollars and your hard-earned tax dollars that are going into the pockets of a few. And I don't see a lot of support for these projects outside of those that have the financial interest in them. And so if you took those 45Q tax credits, or, you know, 45Z or whatever, off of the table, I do not think that you would see these projects happen. So if the free market demanded it and the consumers wanted it and the public wanted it, you would see the outcry, and we would have seen that with the result of RL21. Mm-hmm. But what did we see? We saw the opposite effect. And that was, I mean, that was us working our tails off without a lot of money against us. And so, and you know, that when you see, and I will just say too, I've said again and again, I am not against economic development. Like, our family was big ethanol supporters and investors. We did work with Dakota Access for the oil pipeline that came through. And we see, you know, we need energy independence. We need all of these things, but again, not at the expense of constitutional rights. Those right. have to come first, or we will get sold out to the highest bidder.
Absolutely. So Summit just this last week has applied, and we're reading through kind of the documents and what they're saying. Something that was notable to me is they're literally asking the PUC to override and supersede and preempt those counties, which is exactly what RL21 read as, is that it would have taken the local control and the voices of the county commissioners away. And there are multiple counties in the state of South Dakota that have set setbacks and ordinances for the siting of this pipeline. And Summit Carbon Solutions is basically saying, we can't work with that. And we want you to override the will of the people and the will of the counties and give us what we want. So I guess what's next, Carla? You've been through this before. As they reapply, they have public meetings. What are next steps for people to do if they want to get involved and help fight to protect their private property rights?
Yeah, so I would direct people to the SDPUC site. I would encourage them to look at that docket. I would encourage them to keep their eye open for the public meeting that will be held in their area. I believe there are 6 public meetings that I heard that are going to be held in January. Mm-hmm. And so when those come to your area, you need to show up. You need to be informed before you get there. And you need to be ready to ask some hard questions. There will be a PUC official there, along with representatives from the pipeline, for you to ask questions and for them to present to you as well. And I will just remind people, I remember when I went to my first one in Canton and I was able to ask some questions. Be ready, because I pulled up the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission information guide to siting pipelines. And there are 4 things that is the applicant responsibility. And these are the 4. Number 1, will comply with all applicable laws and rules. Those are your county setbacks or ordinances that they have in place. Number 2, will not pose a threat of serious injury to the environment, nor the social or economic condition of inhabitants or expected inhabitants. So that we're not only talking about the people that live there now, but we're talking about future generations. Number three, will not substantially impair the health, safety, or welfare of the inhabitants. And number four, will not unduly interfere with the orderly development of the region. Now, there's more to those that you can go on and read, but when I got up and testified at the, or said my piece at the first PUC meeting held in Canton in our area, I said, I don't think that they fit, that they can abide by any four of those.
Right.
You know, and one of the reasons they were denied the first time around was they could not abide by all applicable laws and rules. So they know that right now. And they even say that in their application, they know that they cannot abide by all of the ordinances that are in place in some of these counties. And so that's why they are probably, I think we're going to be seeing them sue some of the counties already. That's already started happening in Iowa. And I think you're also going to see them moving forward. And what we saw, they're going to ask the PUC to preempt the counties, just throw those ordinances out and we're going to go through with our project. And so that's where it's going to come down to the PUC. And that's why we really have to get to these public meetings. You have to raise your voice. We're going to try to do what we can in the legislature to respond to what the people have asked us to do. But secondly, you guys have to show up to these meetings.
Mm-hmm. And I'll be sharing those meeting dates and locations on my social media. So, you know, I've had a lot of people say, Amanda, thanks for sharing your voice. And I say, well, I'm only as strong as the people that show up and stand next to me. And we need thousands of people at all of these things. We need your voice. We need you to be brave. We need you just to show up. You don't even have to speak, but your presence at these meetings speaks volumes. You can also sign up to become an intervener. If you are, you know, concerned about this project, you don't have to be on the route, but the reality is it's coming through your community. You're impacted. You have a right to care and ask questions and be informed in the process. Another thing I'd like to remind people of, or invite them to, Carla, is maybe let's tell them about our rally we have planned.
Yeah, so we have a rally in Pier planned for the day before the session starts, and that is Monday, I believe, January 13th at noon at the Capitol. So we would love to have all of you come and join us there. We'll have a good time of fellowship. We'll have some speakers that will share what's going on and what our vision is for the legislative session.
Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a really great way to kick off the session and really remind the legislators, especially the ones that haven't really landed on the side of the landowner, that A, they work for us, and B, we have a mandate. And the state of South Dakota has spoken loudly on this, and now we expect follow through. So I think it's going to be a great way to kick things off for 2025. Our fight continues. Carla, we just have a few minutes left of the show. Any other advice? You know, people across the country have been messaging me saying this is coming to my backyard. What advice would you have for them to even begin to being the Davids facing the Goliath and picking up the stone?
You know, I tell people this all of the time. Did you know that you have a library board in your town? You have a school board. I mean, I didn't even know there was such a thing when I got started in this as a library board. There are all kinds of battles going on around us all of the time. And I think where we win is when the people start getting involved and start going to some of these meetings and getting on these boards. And so I would encourage you to at least, even if you don't say anything, go to your public meetings, sit there in the chair, and that even helps for them just to know that somebody is watching and paying attention. And I will also just add to, if you get a letter in the mail regarding this project, Summit Carbon Solutions, coming through your area, like Amanda said, you have the right to sign up on the PUC site, go to the meetings, and it will give you the requirements of what it means to be a party, to have party status. And mm-hmm. I would also say, encourage your county to become an intervener. There are some counties that were interveners last time around, and they were able to send a lawyer or somebody from their county to represent them and basically defend these ordinances. But again, back to your point, it takes the people getting involved, making those calls to your local officials. Sometimes we can't do everything. Us local officials, we're trying our best, but I will say we need the help of the people in our districts and our townships and our counties to get involved and to raise their voices.
Mm-hmm. I would agree. And there's one more victory we didn't even talk about, Carla, and that was the South Dakota Supreme Court. And so I want to share that one quick too, because it's notable now that Summit's coming back around people's communities wanting to sign people up, is that The South Dakota Supreme Court ruled that Summit Carbon Solutions had failed to prove it was a common carrier or commodity, and that they did not have the right to invasively survey on people's property like they did at Jared Bosley's house, where they walked into his home and his shop and bore a 90-foot hole and drove over cornfields and soybeans and pastures and trees. They do not have the right to do that in the state of South Dakota. So I think it's important to know your rights. And if they show up to your door, you don't have to let them at your dining room table. You don't have to talk to them. You can tell them no, thank you. And that's a full sentence. And they don't have the right to come messing around on your property without your permission. And so I appreciate the Supreme Court standing for what is right and protecting those constitutional rights we have in that decision. And I guess the battle continues, Carla, one way or another. So thank you for all you do. I know you have much to do in this fight, and we'll see you down the road very soon.
Thank you, Amanda.
While I've got you here, I would love to invite you to check out my website, AmandaRadke.com. Each week, I share my column, this podcast, and new items to shop for farm and ranch families, including my children's books that celebrate agriculture. Use code DUSTYTRAIL to save 15% on your next purchase. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for supporting my small business and for your continued support in keeping me on the road fighting for farm and ranch families. I'm thankful to each and every one of you who tune into this show each week. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so be sure to subscribe, share, and leave a review to let me know how you're liking the content and our guests. Until the next time we meet on the Dusty Trail, I'm Amanda Radke, and this is the heart of rural America.